Welcome to Alchemist X Innovators Inside, the podcast where we explore the world of corporate innovation and dive deep into the minds of thought leaders, high achievers, and risk takers. I'm your host, Ian Bergman, and together we'll uncover the challenges, triumphs, and secrets behind successful innovation journeys. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur, an industry veteran, or simply curious about the ever-evolving landscape of innovative ideas and what it takes to put them into practice, this is the podcast for you. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and let's embark on this exciting journey together.
Rita, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you. It's been what, like 3 minutes?
Ian, it's been like 3 minutes. Oh, but I want to say, you know, welcome to Alchemist X Innovators Inside. I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm just as thrilled, maybe more.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got to meet at one of those really cool entrepreneurial focused events a while back. It was the demo day for the TELUS Community Safety and Wellness Accelerator in Edmonton. Yeah. And that seems like a while ago now.
It was about a year ago now.
Six months, a year. Time doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah, I know. Everything is a blur now, right? So I just go so fast. Yeah, it's been a little while since we saw each other last in Edmonton. And we were introduced by Juliet Miranda.
Yes. That's right. An entrepreneur, an amazing entrepreneur from an Alchemist X program. That's right. And I think, you know, that got us talking about the entrepreneurial journey and innovation. And I think we stared at each other at some point. We're like, we should do a podcast together.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of how it went. We started to, I think we ended up geeking out about something about entrepreneurs, because that's what we do. And Juliet walked away and said, I'm done with the geekiness. And she went off to do her thing. And so we geeked out for a while. And then we're like, hey, yeah, we should do this. Yeah, let's do this.
So here we are, and it's awesome. And so, you know, I would love to kind of introduce our audience to Rita. I'm going to ask you to do a brief introduction of yourself. Like, who are you and what brought you to this conversation about entrepreneurship?
Well, I guess, so a little bit of background, you know, some, I guess, meat and potatoes about Rita. Rita's, you know, married, has three kids. I have a daughter and two sons. We've got two dogs and a cat, and right now 25 large, you know, fully mature chickens. And then we just have 6 brand new chicks as of this morning.
Okay, that's adorable, and a full household.
Yeah, and it's going to continue. So there's just a little bit of a tiny background there. And then, you know, where did I start in my kind of journey of entrepreneurship? I guess it goes just back 4 generations as far as we know. Great-grandpa was the village banker. And so when people needed money, they went to him, and that was the bank. You go to him, and he has like a stash of cash at the house. And he was also a farmer, right? Everyone was farming back then, and sugar canes were his thing. And then, you know, went to the next generation, did more farming, went to the next gen where my grandma, I guess my Biji, that's what you say in Punjabi, she ran the house of, you know, many kids. At the time, grandpa was always away. He was a military man. And she not only ran the house, but she actually ran a business. And so she had livestock. And every time grandpa would come back and say, hey, let me help out, she'd be like, you can't. You don't know how to negotiate. And you would bleed the business dry and it'd be finished. So you can just help over here, but you're never allowed to negotiate or do anything else. So I guess I also come from a line of very strong women. And then I guess the next gen, mom and dad, did a couple of different things and pursuits. And then they also ran something in the food business, a franchise. So it was kind of always with us, right? So entrepreneurial was like kind of in the blood, I guess. But the last business that they touched, and I guess we did it family-wise, we kind of bought the business with a handshake. And that's what you did.
Interesting.
Like 26, 30 years ago. So we bought it with a handshake, because who the heck needs a lawyer, banker, or accountant? And who do you trust anyways? Maybe a better way to say it is that we didn't know any better, didn't care. We're like, we know better. And then you quickly realize, shoot, something's not right here. And I wish we had actually learned a little bit more. Or maybe we should have talked to someone after we're kind of dissecting around the table. Do we have the wherewithal to continue and pursue for 2 more years? Because that's probably what it's going to take. Or do we call it quits now? And it's not as fast as that. There's no fast anything on that process. But you have to make a decision. Otherwise, you've got your head in the sand and you can't, you know, it's going to be worse. So we called it quits. covered the vendors and everybody else and took the hit ourselves. And that was about six figures. And that's when we ran around the table and said, hey, you know, something's not right. What should we have done? What could, you know, and you do a debrief. That's just what you do, as painful as it is, but you need to figure it out. Because what if you want to try it again? And then we realized that, you know, those people that I mentioned earlier probably could have come in handy.
Yep.
You know, the accountant probably could have seen, you know, the writing on the wall and the numbers. The lawyer could have helped us with different exit or understanding with regards to the lease or the franchisor or a franchisee agreement. We could have had some different understanding from the banker. And so all with that understanding, we said, well, who would run a business and who knows how to run it well and scale and grow and build? So we kind of looked around the table and said, wasn't it the banker? They're the ones that say yes to the right businesses, right? So I was appointed to go figure that out. And so I walked into a local community credit union and said, hi, I'm interested in getting a job. And, you know, that's exactly what I did. I just walked in like that.
Amazing.
But yeah. Prior to that, I did do 10 years of retail and I was doing profit sharing with a, you know, a large retail company. So I understood a little bit. That put me through university, where I did a degree in cell biology and genetics, double major with a minor in psych. So I did learn the art of, you know, serving, which is what I still do today. And so the, you know, this lady is looking at me, she's like, you know, what's your background in banking? And I said, oh, I got a checking account, a saving account. I got like RESPs for the kids, which is a registered education savings account for them. And she's just like flabbergasted. Like, how could you actually just walk in like this? Unbeknownst to her was a head of the HR department, just listening to me chat. And so he's like, but I didn't know who he was. He's like, well, you know, how do you take care of a customer or whatever? Like, you know, maybe just answer that question for me. I said, well, you know, they come to you with a need or a want or a desire.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have either a service or a product that matches or it doesn't. It's just that simple. That's what I've got out of 10 years of learning and teaching and, you know, consulting abroad as well. I did that. And he just looked at me and goes, you want to start at the ground level? You want to go into a call center and face like a firing squad because we're doing a triple bank merger? You want to try that?
Ooh.
What do you think?
Ooh.
And I said, bring it.
That is a firing squad.
So I said, bring it. And he goes, so want to come join us in a couple of weeks and get ready for that? And I said, yeah, sounds like a plan. And so that's how I hit the ground running. Like just, you know, I think I've always been in a sink or swim situation. It's never been like, oh, let's, you know, just kind of put your toe in the water, dip in and like go. It's always been like that. So fast forward 10 years, I worked with the credit union, did well. I was headhunted by a charter bank and they pulled me in to run three of their areas for a business. So that means I managed probably, I don't know, 1,000 or so clients at a time and kind of was the stand-in when the head guy left. So that means I ran, I don't know, a team of 12 or 13 for any credit requests, inquiries, issues. And so that was, I don't know, several thousands of companies that I was working with. And then from there, I was headhunted by a federal bank. And so that was a little bit different. They do things a little differently. And that was back in 08. And that's when we had some interesting thing called, you know, a little bit of a meltdown.
Just a small one. I remember that.
Yeah, a small one. You know, we all knew something was going on. And then, you know, when it hit in September, you know, that's when I was with the federal bank. But the federal bank was interesting because it provided both consulting as well as financing. And it was a bank that allowed, you know, when things go, you know, wrong or, you know, you're in a recession or situations happen like that, they actually step forward. So I was part of the group that was issuing thousands of letters saying, here's like 100K, sign here. You know, we want to keep you going. And, you know, there were some qualifications, of course, that you had behind the scenes. But, you know, I was that person. But I was also the person that had to go and do consulting with all of them, hundreds and hundreds of companies. Let's analyze your financials, see where you're at. Can you pivot? Can you do something? Can you change? How do you want to move forward? And or it's time to, you know, sell off assets. It's time to shut down. And, you know, as we've been through it as a family, we were able to also do that. I was able to do that with them, knowing how hard it was, but, you know, just explaining, here's the steps of what would happen next. And if you want to continue, none of those were easy conversations, but it was a crap ton of learning. And we kind of came out of that a couple of years later. And that's when people were, you know, had made the decisions to take advantage of things and or pivot or do something different to allow them to deal with the situation on hand. And if they did, then they started growing and growing a lot. And that's when I was headhunted by an international bank and all those clients. So they started at the small little mom pop credit union, and they moved to the charter bank, then they moved to the federal bank with me, and then they moved to the international bank, and then we moved them all around the world. So 10 years of that,
yeah,
good learning of the art and science of how to, you know, finance from, you know, mom, pop, all the way to, you know, getting international and, you know, speaking to people all around the world at all times, you know, coordinating schedules. So I never slept when I was at the international bank. I think it was up at 4. You worked out heavily at that point because you had to. And then
just to be awake.
That was the, you know, that was a P90X era. And then after you do that, then you go to breakfast, lunch, dinner, galas, you sponsor things. Yeah, you're running the shows, you're doing events, you're at the front, you're on a podium, you're always speaking, and you're taking big wigs from around the world everywhere to different things. It sounds kind of glamorous. It so wasn't to me. And I'd be the one that go, I just want to go home, sit in my tights and hang out with the fam. And
sure,
everyone's like, but you get to go to all these. It just kind of gets old fast, man.
You know, I hear you. Like, there is excitement, right? The first, you know, the first trip, the first gala is exciting, the magic glass, but it fades. And that's like a sad truth about humanity. But this is really interesting, right? So, you know, you went through this phase of your career from, you know, a very kind of entrepreneurial kernel to really like developing a body of expertise at some large companies, right?
Yeah.
But I want to come back for a second. We're going to circle back here to sort of like, you know, Partners for Growth and the Serenity Sisters and all of the work that you're doing with entrepreneurs. But
yeah,
you said something really interesting. I want to get your thoughts on it, right? You said you guys didn't know any better. You're building a company. You're like, we don't need bankers and all that.
Yeah.
You were doing one of these things that actually we celebrate with entrepreneurs, right? Which is learn by doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, honestly, you roll up your sleeves, you're just like, we're going to do it. Yeah. And then at a certain point, you realized like, one of the lessons is, oh yeah, we can't do this alone, not all the time.
Correct. Absolutely correct. You know, we miss building a team. We miss, you know, actually understanding the foundation, understanding where we wanted to go, the team itself, internally and externally. There's two sides of that.
Yeah.
So you're right. You're right. There was just so many lessons there. And, you know, the financial one, and that's obviously heartful, but, you know, it's also painful and emotionally as well. Like you feel you failed. And
yeah,
everybody knows because it was a small town. And, you know, and it felt like, oh my gosh, you know, like, you know, the walk of shame everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Right. It was, you know, or we just pretend, oh, nothing happened. Everything's fine. You know, or, you know, because you're supposed to grin and bear it, but it wasn't.
Well, it's hard. And man, I feel like we could have a whole conversation on like how much of ourselves as people we put in, you know, to these things and how we get wrapped up. I'm like, oh, this thing failed. Did I fail? Did we fail? Are we failures? I'm not going to do that. I want to say, I thought that was a really interesting observation on, you know, learning by doing and learning that while the entrepreneurial journey can be a lonely journey, it's extra hard when you are alone. And so let's bring this back fast forward. You built a body of expertise at some really cool jobs, right? As you sort of did some, frankly, climbing of the corporate ladder and all that good stuff. How did you get back into working with entrepreneurs? Because that's what you do now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the whole point of going into this and of the learning, so it's like twofold. One, we want to learn, not make the same mistake, but I wanted to learn and also get paid. See, that's kind of how I think. So after 10 years, it was, you know, you do have to kind of think, like, how long am I going to stay learning? Right. You know, and also building a network, which was the other piece of the puzzle, which was kind of the external team that I mentioned earlier. But there came a time in the international bank and they got a new head. And then the ship decided to change directions. And so you also, again, you know, in your life journey, sometimes, you know, in an earlier stage, you kind of go, well, I'll just keep going. But for me at that point, you know, our kids were, you know, not older, but, you know, in the entering the teenage years. And, you know, I kind of knew who I was a little bit more. It's not that I still don't know, but it's a little bit more now, right? And it was a little bit more at that point. And I said, no, this is not who I am. and I don't agree with the direction the ship is taking. And there was many, many reasons behind it, but there was a lot of more moral reasons behind it. We also had a family member. My younger sister, her husband was quite ill and had to go in for kind of a last possible attempt, a life-saving operation for cancer. Mm-hmm. And we had two nieces. And so they said, you know, can you take our nieces? So it was kind of like a combo, you know, the ship changing direction and then, you know, a family situation happens and it kind of helps you really put things into perspective, right? No, this is not where we're at. And, you know, in our family, we always have one breadwinner and the other one's with the kids. Mm-hmm. So I chatted with Sam, that's the old man, and said, here's the situation. We've got two nieces. They need to come to our place, but we need to dedicate ourselves to them. And I need to quit, I think. And what do you think? And he's like, yeah, bring it on. Quit. Say goodbye. And it's time to bring the nieces in. And this is what we're going to do.
Amazing.
And so you focus on what you're supposed to do and what's right. And the other thing is you focus on gut. So even with planning strategy that we do regularly, at the end of the day, you follow the gut. So we did that, had a blast with the nieces, had five kids, no income. That was fun. And then I was getting phone calls saying, hey, can you help us with this? Can you help us with that? And what are you doing? And I kept trying to tell people I was retired. I wasn't retired. You know, you got mouths to feed. That's impossible. And so I just got, you know, one of the large government banks was saying, hey, we need a help. We need a hand with something. And I think you can do it. And I said, sure, let's figure that out. In the meantime, I'm like, you know what? Maybe there's something here. Maybe there's something here that I can kind of put back together. And so we started formulating the idea, which I learned all the way throughout the entire time, which there was a gap between access to capital and entrepreneurs.
Yep.
That's one thing I understood.
Huge gap.
So we built everything around that gap and the understanding of what not to do with our learnings and all the learnings I had over the last decade after that. And so it slowly kind of emerged. I went to the accountant. I worked on the foundation for 6 weeks. I was with the lawyers for 6 weeks, building out this idea and the premise that we're going to go help companies and support them in their growth and finance strategies, but not fully having an understanding of who this end customer was and what it all looked like. But I knew what I needed to do, which was 100% different than we did before, which is set the foundation right and talk to all the people and build those pieces out. Because I also had to have the mentality of we have to build for success. And what are we going to do with all the money that comes? And so, you know, there was those kind of pieces involved. But more importantly, it was just like, we don't want to do the other thing again. And so in the meantime, these things were coming in. And so you get another one coming in and I kind of go, oh, shoot. Can't really invoice because we're still figuring this other piece out. And so we're working with the understanding we're going to start issuing all these things. And so, you know, within 6 weeks, we were incorporated and set up Partners for Growth.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that was June 21, 2013. That's when we did 11 years ago.
That's incredible. So I'm going to put you on the spot here because we've got, you know, one of these things we do with founders and entrepreneurs is the one-liner exercise, right? It's the distilling everything that you do, everything that is in your mind, your vision, your dreams into five words or something like that. Now that you've been doing this for 11 years, what's the one-liner on Partners for Growth? What do you tell people it is?
Well, I think we're just your team. We're your partners to help you grow. It's all in the name.
I love that.
It's just that simple. We have built a business based on relationships. And relationships in terms of both building your internal and external teams to help you, you know, start, build, grow, scale, and exit your business.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, it's such an interesting connection. You've packaged your life story into such an interesting story, right? But it is full circle to a little of your start of your entrepreneurial journey. But it's also really important. So I had the chance to come on one of your podcasts and we were getting into a chat for a while about the importance of a team for many reasons, right? Yeah. To balance ideas. Nobody can be an expert at everything, you know, to bring in support, to hold each other accountable. And so that's what y'all are doing. You have entrepreneurs coming to you. They have their idea. They've started their journey and they're like, I don't know what I don't know. Help. Is that kind of how it starts?
Yeah. Yeah. So just like same as that old that time I chatted with Paul, you know, the guy behind the scenes, the head of HR, it was like these people, these entrepreneurs come to you with a need or a want or a desire.
Yeah.
And I dissect it. So we chat for about an hour, you know, do a discovery session, really understand. And then I say, send me a note if you actually are interested in going any further. The discussion that we talk about is all high level, you know, just understanding who they are, where they came from, where they want to go, what the issue is, how do they actually make money? And, you know, answer the three questions, you know, kind of what's the problem, what's the solution, and why you? Those are the three yeah. big questions that you have to have an understanding on. And then, you know, we pick one thing that is bothering them and we talk about it. We talk about it during that first discovery session. And, you know, I say at the end of it, you know, I hope that maybe this has given you a couple of ideas or thoughts to maybe move forward. And, you know, the reason why you came to us is because you were referred to us by a partner. And we call everybody we work with our partners, which is all the accountants, the lawyers, people like yourself, you know, other clients, every single person you would need to build, grow, set up, sell a business. We work with all of them. So we've amassed like just over, I don't know, 1,000+ partners. We work very closely with 350. I talk to about like maybe 30 to 40 a week on a regular basis. And those are, you know, the people that we surround our clients with. We've done that hard work of building and finding those good people that can help you. Yep. And so in that discovery session, I kind of say, okay, so we talked about nothing because we're not engaged in insurance and legal, kill me. And my last question to them is always, have I honored my partner? So if it was Ian, have I honored Ian? And the answer has to be yes. Otherwise, I stay on the phone. And I just stay on the phone until they say, oh, there was one guy that made me stay on for 3 hours, but he's been a client for 11 years. So I guess we give him that. But I couldn't believe it. I'm like, well, you know, because the premise of Partners for Growth is you have to answer the partner call. You have to honor the partner. Yeah. You have to, you know, so that's the premise. And so I couldn't get off the phone. And so I called my partner and they were just, oh, they're so embarrassed. And they were like, oh, they were dying. And they're like, oh, I'm going to call him and tell him. I go, no. It's a good joke on me because they knew that was our question that we asked and we couldn't get off the call. And so they took what they could. And that was a pretty sharp entrepreneur, I think. But I wasn't ready for that, right?
So. I was just going to say, I was like, I think that's a pretty sharp entrepreneur.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like we all have had these conversations with entrepreneurs that are like, well, like if you can get it, if you can take it, take it. I mean, there's ethical lines you have to be careful yes, of course. But yes. But that persistence, you know, there's the red flags, the green flags, the yellow, whatever. That persistence to a point is a bit of a green flag for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So
even if in the moment it's real painful.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. But I think we did good in that call. I think we did good. So.
Oh, that's so good. So just, you know, real brief, we don't need to get into the details, but how do you structure this relationship? Do you take equity in these companies? Is it a fee based, you know, how does this typically pan out? What are the founders and the entrepreneurs giving in order to receive the team?
Yeah. Yeah. So we originally started with, it's kind of like a package deal. We understand what the situation or the concern is. And, you know, it was originally typically most people start with us because they need access to capital. And so, okay, yep. Well, how much do you need and when do you need to buy and what is it for and what's it going to do and how many times do you turn it over and when's the return? Okay, got it. So we kind of just go, okay, we can package that up because I think we know what that's going to look like and how long it might take. And then we kind of had, so there was also an hourly piece because sometimes you just need a little bit of coaching. So depending on the level of complexity and the amount of work that we were supposed to do versus what they would do. And then after a few years, it got boring. So that was year 5. And so then we tried, okay, so we'll try to see, maybe we'll take a steak. Yep. So we'll try that method. And then we'll do a little bit of, you know, tiny bit, you know, up front, but really they need some support. And we've had a few conversations. Let's take some, you know, pieces of different like companies. So years 5 through 7, we did that with a few. None of them worked with all the knowledge and understanding that we have. Yeah, they didn't work for various reasons. And it was, again, good lessons for learning because we walked in because it was the character of the person. That's the big reason of why we decided to say we'll take a piece of it versus working on package or hourly or another method of remuneration. And it was a character that we thought that had, you know, the passion, the expertise, they were filling a gap, there was a need, but there was some sort of impact both locally and, you know, some sort of impact that could potentially be measured either both here environmentally or around the world. There was something that was going to make a big difference or a big change. And they couldn't see it, but I could see it after working with, you know, now just over 10,000 companies. You can see things a little bit differently. And so, but what always ended up was with each one of the situations was we probably didn't plan out or map out the right mix of team and saying we're going to enforce kind of some understanding that we have to have kind of a little bit more buy-in voting or kind of, it wasn't a dictatorship. It was more kind of like we're going to vote together. And so build more systems around that understanding to be able to make the decisions. Because what ended up happening is we left it to the founder each time to make the final, you know, And we thought it made sense because, you know, it was the baby and it made sense. We were supposed to kind of come in and support. But there were so many things that were along the way. And like you said, there's so many things that you know or others know that they wouldn't want to listen. They just said, I have my head down. This is where we're going. Like, no, we can see potential. We can see a change coming. We see this other thing. We have to switch. We got to move. We got to adjust. We got to realign. And it didn't work. And so they just wanted their head forward. And so we had to say, no, we got to bow out. We didn't ask for our money back. We didn't ask for anything back. We just said that it became, for us, we're risk people, it became too risky for our reputation. So we just simply pulled out.
You know, that is such an interesting insight, especially when you say risky for reputation, right? Because there's financial risk, but...
No, nothing outweighs a reputational risk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I actually think that's such a great sort of guiding post, right? Whether it's, you know, reputation, which is hopefully wrapped up in, you know, ethics, morals, doing right, and also, you know, like this outcome and the success. I think that's actually a really important guardrail. So, you dropped something just kind of casually that it's kind of staggering to me. You said 10,000 companies.
Yeah, I think I stopped counting.
That's a lot of people that you've talked to.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of data points. So we tell entrepreneurs that every conversation is a chance to learn.
Yes.
And so you've had a lot of these conversations. What are folks telling you, especially recently? Like, what are these entrepreneurs telling you about what makes their life hard? What makes their life easy? And how's that been changing lately?
You know, it was more at the beginning, it was more all about getting the access to capital and then being able to, you know, get people to buy in or help them grow faster. That was always the big piece of the puzzle. Mm. Now it's more nuanced. The big things nowadays right now is we've become, because of, I don't like the mentality of scarcity, but it's not scarcity. The political changes, the economic changes, the climate, not just here, but around the world, and all of it impacts us now. It's very different than where it was before because it didn't really hit you, but now it does. You know, the ripple effect is, you know, super fast. But it's more the nuances, and we've become a litigious society. So I'm actually on the phone with lawyers every single day. And the kind of concern is the HR. That's a big issue right now, either A, the lack of, and or B, you have it. And then I don't really know how to explain it very well in a good way, Ian, but it's more about when we went through everything, and I had mentioned, you know, I did everything by sink or swim. You don't just dip your toes in. You go all in. We went all in and paid our dues. Like, you know, you get up at 4 and you go to bed after midnight and you do it all over again. And that's 20 years of doing that. And, you know, that's what we call paying your dues so that you learn. And then it allows you to get to a different place to be able to say, hey, I kind of might be able to help because I learned a bit, right?
Yep.
Whereas now it's more like, I know because I did some theory and, you know, we're working with you because you're smart and everything else, but I did some theory, but I just don't have those life lessons and I need to have a bit of a balance. So I'm going to take a step back and, you know, I have to call it quits right now and I can't continue.
You're hearing that from the entrepreneurs?
This, remember I said it was an HR issue. So that's where the entrepreneurs are coming to me at going, how do I deal with this?
What the F do I do about this?
Well, yeah, that's a way better way of saying it.
Well, no. So this is like, all right, maybe we get to be grouchy old geezers. I'm a grouchy old geezer. I'm not saying you are, but like maybe that's really interesting because, you know, this is going to be a sensitive topic for a lot of people.
Oh, it is. It is hugely sensitive.
That classic, there is something, right, to that I'm going to say platonic ideal. I don't know what it is, but that stereotype of, you know, the all-in founder and entrepreneur, the hustler who's thinking about their business, who drags people along behind him, their team. You know, I mean, we got the Musks of the world who are publicly vilified for being a-holes a lot of the time, but there's a counterpoint to that in their success. And I love this. So recently, this tension with the, we could say coddling, I'm going to say coddling, but also like, you know, the balance and the expectations of employees, that's coming up as a challenge for your entrepreneurs. I think that's really interesting. I have never talked to an early stage entrepreneur who wants to be thinking about HR. That is the last thing in their mind they want to be thinking about. So what are they doing?
It's funny because any mentee we get on now, it's always like, they're like, okay, so what should I go start learning and searching for? I go, don't worry about finance. Don't worry about this. You're going to go start doing courses on HR. You're going to go start learning HR stuff right away. And then we're going to hire you an HR consultant because we have lots of them. We're going to bring them in and support you with it. But you need to understand what you're walking into.
And how sad does this make them?
They're not sad because they don't know yet. They don't know what they don't know. So they're excited. They're like, oh, great, I'll go learn. And so
that's good. And is this about like, is this about just sort of dealing with people, which we all have to do and is important? Okay. Or is it, what's changing though?
It's communication and having to understand that the old way, I guess, the old geezer way, like me as well, of thinking is you go do the job until the job is done. And if there's a deadline, you know, we're in our season where I go to bed usually about 4 a.m. and I'll do that all the way till probably June. And then I'll take a breather and I do farm life for like psychotic hours, but I won't, you know, I won't go to bed at 4 a.m. I'll go to bed at midnight, which is normal now. And then in September, it starts all over again. I know my seasons, right?
Yeah.
But I can take my breaks when I need to take my breaks. But I accept that and understand that. Whereas now the staff are like, the difference is like I've came in here and I'm going to start at, you know, 7:30. But before I start, I'm going to have a cup of coffee. I'm going to do all my stuff, which we did in advance of starting. And before we started, or when we were arrived 15 minutes in advance. Otherwise, we were considered late.
Is this just a selection bias thing, though? Like, are people self-selecting into a romantic lifestyle of like working for the startup, working for the new company, working for the entrepreneur without realizing what they're getting into?
No.
Or is there something more fundamental going on?
I think that it's just a matter of a mind shift, you know, in terms of we were okay to go and say, okay, that's 15 minutes early means I'm on time.
Yeah.
And because that was instilled in us, but now it's different. Now it's just different. The instilled value is work-life balance, always work-life balance. And we're not saying we're killing the staff, but it comes to a point where, you know, somebody says, I don't want to do that because it's extra work. I don't want to do that because I have to go now at 5 o'clock, but there was deadlines, there was things that were coming up, but we can't do that. And then there's the idea of, I only want to work from home. I can't come in and I only want to work 4 days. I can't do 5 days, but business runs like 7 days. So we're seeing there's a change. I guess I'm not saying people should work nonstop, perhaps like the way I do. Maybe I'm the abnormal one. I guess I am the abnormal one. But what I'm saying is I think that communication or that understanding of this is what it actually means to work for us has to be communicated a lot differently than it was before. So how do you feel about, you know, coming in early or staying a little later for real, real, not just I will do it because I want to get the job in this interview. Like, this is real now. And yes, you will get compensated. All those pieces are in place, but this is serious now. Like, this is a real question. So how do you answer that question? And so I don't want to harp too much just on the HR nuances, but the other piece of the HR, it's not just the employees. The rules, regulatory compliance and issues, legality, insurance, all of that is changing so quickly. And it's really hard to keep up. You know, designations, how you talk to people, what you, you know, refer to them as. To many people, it's so much all at once and you can't keep up, let alone figuring out the business side of things, right?
Well, this is the problem, right? You literally can't keep up. And in fact, you shouldn't be keeping up as the entrepreneur, as the CEO, as the founder, because you actually need to be building a business.
Correct.
And so I guess you know, the full circle is this is where the partners come in. But
yeah. And so we'll work on it a little bit and then we'll say, okay, now that we've dissected it and understood it a bit, you know, if there's a serious situation, the litigious side of things, you know, yeah, we've got lawyers that we bring in and have conversations with. But then the other side of it is more HR and working with fractional HR companies
yep.
to build out these foundational pieces. Just like everything else that I always talk about is when we work with someone, we like to do front-end loading. That means we dissect you apart and then we really, really want to dig into the foundation and make sure that, you know, we have a strong foundation, because when you're going to scale and grow, you don't have time to go back and fix the foundation pieces because they always fall apart if you don't have that solid foundation.
I can't tell if I'm about to argue with you or ask a question, but here's
You look like you are. You look like
no,
you.
I'm excited. Well, so here's the thing, Rita. You just said something, because they always fall apart. So I would say 999 out of 1,000 companies that I've seen, by the time they reach a certain point, if they're venture backed, let's call it Series A, something like that. But it, you know, the point at which they're about to take off for growth, they realize two things. They realize, you know, one, all of a sudden they need a lot more specialists in their team, right?
Yes.
Because you can't just run around doing everything.
Yep.
But two, they actually have to go rebuild all of that infrastructure that they built, the business operations, the technology itself, you know, if it's a tech company, often has to be completely refactored and rebuilt. So are you saying that there's a way to avoid that? Because I feel like that's pretty universal. It's not ideal.
No, there's definitely some pieces up front that you can do to avoid that. So if I know that I'm taking this product out to market and I know that this is where it's going to go, I've got my target, I've got my data and understanding, and I know that it's going to hit X by, you know, the end of X year, because I've figured out quite a bit of my information, I know I need to build that infrastructure right from the get-go. So that means I have to have the lawyer that understands not just, you know, a base understanding of incorporation. I need to have like a highly specialized tax lawyer as well. I need to have an understanding, perhaps, like, you know, I've got the IP team. I've got, you know, all the different pieces that would layer that or factor into that, so that when it comes time to move that forward, then I just pull the trigger.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We start building those relationships very early on and start saying, hi, we're here. This is the situation. Here's what we're walking into. Likely our timeline is, you know, looking like this. Hey, it could change really fast, but we want to make sure we say hi now. And is there any pieces that we want to kind of put into this kind of infrastructure and this roadmap that we're building that makes sense now? Or at least we know that if we did this, this, and this, it leads to an easier next step later. And that's what we work on.
That's great. You're building the team. You're building, to an extent, the safety net. But as you use the word, I do like it. It's the infrastructure. And you're preparing the infrastructure along the way. And I think, to the point of your starting story, right, there's, you don't know what you don't know until you need it. And then, you know, learning by doing is both fun, but also painful if you don't have the support on the side.
Right. And we also build, you know, for you doing well. You know, we want you to make money.
Yeah.
You know, you're here to make money, regardless of what everyone else says and whatever the journey is for most of like the for-profit entrepreneurs. You're here to make money.
You want to be talking to that family office manager.
Yeah. So if you are here to do something and you have other impact or philanthropic ideas or other things you want to do, you first have to be able to be a viable business and make money. And then you can go do all the impact. But first you have to be viable, you know. And so the goal is, if you're going to make money, whether you're going to, you know, do it now, you know, there's different forms of making money. And then, you know, and you're going to exit within, you know, X number of years, we need to map that out right away, because it usually takes about 3 years for mapping those pieces out so that you can effectively pull and keep more of your money versus giving it up to someone else. So those are the pieces that we really hone in on right away as well.
I'm just going to say that that feels probably gratifying to have that conversation for some entrepreneurs, to be pragmatic and hone in on, like, what is this going to look like when we're successful?
Oh, no, no, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. It's like going to the dentist and, you know, I'm pulling your teeth out. I'm the last person you come talk to, because I'm the no fun person. In our family, we've got myself that has three businesses, my sister who owns three businesses, and she's in marketing. And she does all what we call the fun, sexy stuff. So they go to her for fun. And, you know, at the dinner table, when we get together, it's always like, oh, God, boring meetup, blah, blah, blah. I'm talking about numbers and finance and viability and blah, blah, blah. And she's like the fun, exciting person. So no, nobody likes to come to me at all because you were actually referred to us. We don't market. We get referrals only from our partners. So you were sent to us because somebody believes in you enough and feels strongly about you enough to say, go see Partners for Growth because they're going to help fix you up and bring you back to me.
Yeah.
But you have to go through that, you know, dissection and foundation and carving up and probably snipping up and cleaning up and, you know, stuff that nobody wants to do.
I think you're probably underselling a little, you know, the excitement maybe people have walking in. But what is that one piece of advice, or maybe it's just that one question that you bring in early in a conversation that gets people excited, that gets them energized to have the diagnostic with you?
Well, I don't know if it gets them energized or not, but you came to me because somebody sent you over.
Yeah.
You had an issue and it's likely been an issue for a little while, you know, and it worked back in 08 when I asked a question, what does it feel like sitting here and being here in the exact same situation, like a year from now? And that was a question I asked everyone, you know, are we going to be, you know, because you won't make the change, or you don't want to make the change, or you don't know how to make the change, you know, how would it feel if you were here? You're from, I couldn't take it. I don't want to be here from a year from now. Okay. All right. So that sounds like we probably want to make some changes, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Whatever you did in the past. The other thing is the acknowledgement of, usually there's that guilt, that shame walk, that hurt, that pain, that frustration, the, you know, I haven't done what I'm supposed to do and I failed because someone said no to me and I was sent to you, you know, into detention or something like that. And, you know, and that, you know, the teacher nobody wants to go see. And, you know, you have that. And I always go, okay, stop. You know, you've beaten yourself probably up more than enough and more than enough times. I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to say that whatever you did in the past was with the knowledge and understanding, the resources and tools that you had at the time.
Yep.
But now it's different because you actually took that step forward to make that change. You can keep stepping or you can keep looking back.
I like it. That is a wonderful sentiment. It's also just a wonderful thing to keep in mind, as so many of us will get through, you know, we'll go through life kind of relitigating.
Yeah.
Certain moments in our life, yeah. Past experience. I think that's really great.
It's true.
Rita, thank you for sharing that. I think we're coming up to the end of our time here, but I wanted to ask you, you know, for entrepreneurs, for founders that are inspired by your words, who are interested in sort of learning more and following you, where should they look? Are you on LinkedIn? Do you host a podcast?
Oh, that was such a nice segue, Ian. I'm on LinkedIn. I don't do very much social media at all, like I told you. And I tell everybody I know, it's like, I'm not your marketing person. That's okay. We know a lot. So when you need to find them, we can give you great experts, but it's certainly not me. And yes, I do co-host a podcast that I co-founded with several other amazing business women and leaders. And so we started that back in 2020.
Well, and I think that's Serenity Now for Entrepreneurs, which we'll link to in the show notes, and we'll link to your LinkedIn and let people get in touch with you. Before we wrap up, though, this just really fascinating conversation, are there any other kind of like thoughts or advice that you would throw out for aspirational entrepreneurs? What would you just like them to take away and noodle on as they finish their commute or their shower or wherever they're listening to this? I don't even know why I said shower. I don't think people listen to my podcast in the shower. That'd be weird.
I don't think so. And that would be weird. I guess at the end of the day is, you know, are you willing to, you know, make sacrifices for what this dream is and what this looks like? Because you will. Are you willing to understand that whatever you think it's going to take to get it there, it's going to be probably 2-3 times that? And I don't mean to scare people. I don't at all. But you have to see what's the risks that are going to be involved. And there is going to be rejection and people probably not being the nicest to you, you know, in terms of your idea and, you know, what you're doing and what you're working on and not being able to help you or give you money or, you know, et cetera. So there is those pieces. The benefits of it is this, regardless, the whole thing is if you go ahead and do this, it is life-changing. It is game-changing. You will never, ever learn who you are unless you start a business or have kids or get married. Those are kind of your three things. But you will learn so much about yourself, regardless if you do well, if you don't do well. This is like a PhD in life, psychology, in yourself, in business, in people. It's the most incredible thing and the hardest thing I've probably ever done in my life. And I have zero regrets doing it. So regardless of risks, I would say everyone should try to build a business at one point or another in their life, because all of us are given gifts. I call them strengths, gifts, you know, and some people call it weaknesses. And I say, no. I call them gifts and strengths. And so you can do anything as long as you've got the right team. And so if you've got the right team surrounding you, you can go anywhere. So you don't need to know it all. That's the other really cool thing about this journey is, you know, give it a go. And, you know, we'll help you find the team to bring it around you. The other thing is, never before ever in the history have you ever had such ability to have access to knowledge and understanding and people. And when I did this, when we started like 30 years ago to 11 years ago to now, we never had that. We never had podcasts. We never even had the internet, for goodness sakes. I know that sounds really scary to some people, but you have so much more ability and access and knowledge now. So to be honest, it's going to be even better. So I would say, if you have been noodling on something or an idea, start talking.
I love it. Well, Rita, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It was super fun to have you. And for anyone who wants to follow Rita, look online, look for her podcast, and really appreciate it. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks, Ian.
So that's a wrap for today's episode of Alchemist X Innovators Inside. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you found value and insight in today's discussion, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget to share with your friends, colleagues, or anyone who is passionate about corporate innovation or just curious about great ideas and practical insights. Until next time, I'm Ian Bergman. Thanks for tuning in.